Scotland have turned it around at Hampden Park.
Launching is Sven Cuthbert. She strikes. Goal! Erin Cuthbert!
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Scotland National Team Podcast, where we're joined by Scotland and Manchester City midfielder Caroline Weir. Caroline, thanks for coming on the podcast. How does it feel to be back in Scotland camp?
It feels great. Obviously I missed the last camp because of injury, so it's been ages since I've been back in camp, I think a few months, but yeah, it's great to be back.
And that was the first camp that you'd missed out for ages, a couple of years. What was that like, watching the games from home?
Yeah, it was weird. Obviously, yeah, I've not missed a camp. I think I've missed one other camp, and that was literally like 6 years ago. So, to miss camp, I was disappointed, but it was probably the right decision in terms of my recovery and my injury. Watching from home was weird. Like, I was okay until I got to game day, and then I was like, oh, this feels weird. And then obviously watching the Hungary game and Faroes at home was strange, but the girls obviously delivered. They did a great job and started the campaign really well for us.
Did you miss being away? Because I know that you enjoy like sort of camaraderie of the group. You've got a lot of close friends here. So even missing that time with them must have been bad for you.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Camp is great, obviously, for the football, but such a big part of it is being together as a squad. And a lot of us have known each other for years and we are really good mates. So, yeah, to miss out on the camp banter, I had a bit of FOMO, but I'm back now, so it's all good.
And the first time working under Pedro Martinez Losa, how have you found it so far?
Yeah, it's been really good. I actually knew Pedro when he was at Arsenal about 6 years ago. So we have worked together before, but obviously international football is totally different. So I heard good things about the last camp and I was excited to come in this week, and training has been really good. I like what they're trying to implement and the concepts and how they're coaching, and the sessions have been good. So yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's been positive, and yeah, I think we'll be ready to go on Friday.
And a lot's changed since you last worked under Pedro. How do you look back on your time under him? What was that like? What was that period of time like, and what was he like to deal with?
Yeah, I think when I look back, I was like really young. I think I've changed a lot since that time. I think at Arsenal, it was quite a hard learning experience for me, just because I moved away from home and I was on the bench a lot, and I was playing it with these great players in quite a tough environment. So I look back at Arsenal and I don't regret any of it or would change any of it, because I learned so much and I grew up really fast. But I think it was just part of the process. When you're a young player, you kind of go through those things. So now coming out the other side, obviously, being at other clubs, being at international for a few years, I've obviously matured a little bit. Gained more experience. So I've changed a lot, and I'm sure he'll probably say that as well.
And you're obviously coming into camp off the back of scoring another brilliant goal for City. You've gone viral again. What's it like when you see that sort of response? Because that one, again, just went nuts over Twitter.
Yeah, I know. I was actually really surprised, because I think the other goals that I've obviously got attention have been in like a derby, a league game, kind of like a big occasion. But this was just like a Connie Cup game. Which, you know, it shows how far the women's game has come as well, because even, you know, these kind of games are getting a lot of attention and goals like that with social media, and everyone's paying attention. They do kind of attract, a lot of attention. So, I was a bit surprised at that, because I didn't think it was like, you know, the best goal. But
you didn't?
Not really, no.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I just thought it was like a normal goal. But,
so where's it ranking in terms of all the goals you've scored then? Because there's been a few, obviously, sort of high-profile ones that have got a lot of attraction.
Yeah, that one, I think's... I'll take it, because I hadn't scored in a while, so I was happy to score. But I think in terms of, like, my top goals, it's not up there for me. I think the obvious ones are probably, you know, the Derby goals, the Jamaica chip. Free kick.
The chip?
Yeah. United. Yes, the little dink. Yeah, they're probably my favourite ones.
And as you mentioned, you obviously started your sort of career in England with Arsenal, but it's now progressed. You're with Man City. How have you been enjoying that? Because you've been there for a few years now.
Yeah, I've been at Man City. This is my fourth season. So that's the longest time I've been at one club, it's quite a long time. I mean, City is like a great club to be part of, especially as a female player. It's kind of paving the way in lots of different ways. For female football, so for me, you know, I'm kind of passionate about all those kind of things, and as an athlete, you have all the support you kind of need to reach your potential and really kind of develop. So yeah, I think I've learned a lot at City and I've enjoyed my time there so far. And yeah, obviously this season's probably been the most challenging period of time at City, just because we've come off the back of a few bad results, and that's not happened at City for a long time. So yeah, it's definitely a challenging moment right now, but that's part of football as well. That teams go through those moments. So yeah, we're going through one of them at the moment. Yeah.
In terms of that team environment that you have at City, that sort of one club like vibe that they have right now, when you're going into the training centre, it's the same training centre as the men's, and you've had a few interactions with the men's team as well. Like, you've built up a bit of a friendship with Kevin De Bruyne. Like, tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, the facilities, you've been, haven't you?
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
It's amazing. Yeah. Because it's like, so, like 9 pitches and all the grass is cut to the same length as the Etihad. Like,
yeah,
they don't really miss any detail, do they?
Yeah, literally, it's all about the details. And it's not far from the city centre. You can actually see a city centre from like the training pitches. So it's a pretty cool place, facility wise. And yeah, the guys, they train in the same facility, just across like the indoor pitch on the other side. So yeah, we see them quite a lot. We see them on appearances. They're interested in what we're doing. Obviously, we're interested in what they're doing and how they're getting on. And Pep comes and watches training on occasion, which is pretty cool. And Kevin's
nerve-wracking, or
not really? Yeah. No, like he's pretty chill. He's just like kind of turns up out of the blue and speaks to our manager and speaks to us a little bit afterwards. So yeah, there's a good relationship across both teams, and you do feel like you're part of one club. It's not, you know, I've been in clubs where it's, you know, the men's team and that's the club and the women's team are somewhere over there. So yeah, like I say, being a female and being an athlete in that environment, that's great. And yeah, that's what I've really enjoyed.
Because like De Bruyne was like posting on your Instagram like saying superstar and all that, like he's like you know what I mean, like that must be like quite cool for you to see that and to have that sort of relationship with like with a player like him.
Yeah, he's cool. We've sat down a few times and had a coffee before, and it's really interesting hearing him speak about football and the things that he comes up against with, you know, his manager and the team and you know, selection and just how they do things. And it's not too dissimilar to what we go through, and just how he speaks about the game tactically as well. It's, you know, you're sitting with one of the best players there's been, I think, as a midfielder, and as a, like to think, similar kind of player in terms of position, you can learn a lot from him. So yeah, he's been cool, and he's genuinely interested in the women's game and has followed it for quite a number of years now.
And the players, especially someone like him, he seems pretty humble despite all the success he's had, or with all the success he's had. Is that something that you've had to sort of focus on as well, and all the players, because although you've been doing really well, you still need to remain sort of humble and true to your sort of roots, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anyone cannot be humble, it's probably him. He's achieved so much in the game, but like you say, you speak to him, he's just a normal guy. He just loves to play football, and he doesn't get kind of carried away with everything that comes with that in the men's game and you know, everything associated with that, which for us, it's slightly different. We're not quite on that same platform that the men's football has at the moment. It's obviously all going in the right direction, but yeah, I mean, you have to remember where, as much as I'm training at those facilities and playing for a massive club at Man City, you got to remember that that was always a dream, and where you've kind of come from and training with Hibs from the ages of 10 to 17, 18, you know, on Tuesday and Wednesday nights in the freezing cold, like you kind of can't forget how far the game's come and how fortunate we are to be in that position. And that's only because players have come and gone before us and grown the game. Both in Scotland and down south, obviously, in England.
You spoke about your sort of, when you first started playing football, what are your earliest memories?
So probably just like playing in the garden. I have 3 siblings, and my older sister and my younger brother were into football. So we would just be in the garden, like kicking about. My dad was obviously into football. Yeah. So weekends were, like playing for the boys' team. I played for a boys' team when I was 5. Playing for that, going to East End Park, obviously, in the afternoon. Yeah. Big Dunfermline fan. And then getting up early on a Sunday morning and watching Match of the Day with my brother, because it was on too late at night, so we would always get up early on the Sunday. That was basically weekends, and those are like my earliest memories of football. We were just all obsessed with it, especially me. Birthday parties were football.
Yeah, did you not have like the Dunfermline mascot turned up to like a birthday
Sammy
party?
Sammy, he's come to our back garden a few times.
Has he? The back garden? Yeah. I thought you would have met him.
Hamish French. You know Hamish French? He's like a Dunfermline legend. My dad knew when he came to my sister's birthday party.
Right.
Yes, he was signing everything.
Right, okay. Oh, and then you've also had Sammy the Tammy.
Sammy's
I
Hammy,
thought you meant
yeah.
that he was in the costume.
All right, no, but that would have been killed in parts.
Yeah, that.
No, he wasn't. But and then there was a period when Dunfermline had like Astro, like 3G right, at East End.
Yeah.
So we had a few birthday parties there.
Okay, yeah.
Loads of stuff like that. It was just football was everything. And you know, what kit were we wanted for Christmas? The Dunfermline kit, Scotland kit, whatever it
big
was.
Big Zidane fan.
Massive Zinedine Zidane fan. That was my first ever proper kit, the all white Real Madrid with Zidane on the back. Football was just like everything growing up, especially the real young years, like 5 to like 10, 11. It was just all football.
Because like pictures of you when you were younger, like part of the boys team playing at halftime at Dunfermline, like even at a young age, that must have been pretty cool for you.
Yeah, like loads of things like that. And it was always just me. Like, so my sister played a little bit until she was like in her teens, and then she kind of fell away from it. So we were used to being the only girls because she played for a boys team as well, and I was the same. So yeah, I was just always in, whether there was school tournaments, playing for the boys team, going on the pitch at East End. I was always the only girl in the team. And, you know, like looking back, never really thought too much of it. It was just normal. And my parents were really supportive of it. Other parents were pretty supportive of it as well. And that was just the way it was back then. Yeah. I think it's different now, obviously, which is great. You know, girls can go and join girls' teams and there's a lot more opportunities to play. Because if you know, I was fortunate to have really supportive people around me, but there was a period when you get to like 11, 12 and it's a little bit more, not embarrassing, but you become a little bit more aware that
you're the only girl.
You're literally the only girl in like a tournament
of
like hundreds of boys.
Is that what it was like? You were the only girl there?
Yeah, like a lot of the time. I remember going to Hamilton to play like a national, like fives set, like, do you remember like, like a national tournament, five-a-side, primary school.
I didn't
so I was
play
like,
any sort of tournament.
Oh, you didn't? That's a surprise.
Maybe, but not like... Yeah.
You don't get picked in the team?
Nah, I don't think so. Nah, not good enough.
Hamilton. So it was like literally, I'd say like maybe 150 players, like boys playing, loads of different schools from all over the country. And I would be the only girl there. And I know this is a story that's similar to loads of other girls.
What did that feel like when you were there?
It's fine. Like, it was okay, but you'd hear the odd comment like, oh no, they've got a girl, like we're going to beat them. Yeah. Or you have to go and get changed somewhere else and all that kind of thing. And
were you the sort of best player in that team? Or I know you want to try and be humble, but like, were you like, were you the best?
I was like, I always played one of the younger ones until I was like primary seven or whatever.
Must have been satisfying though, knowing that you're like the only girl, but you're obviously confident in your ability. So when you're going, people are questioning you.
I think I must have liked it, and I think that's where my kind of determination came from quite an early age, and probably proving people wrong, because there was definitely a bit of that growing up, even just with my siblings and my brother, you know. We have such a competitive family. Whether it was football or any sport. So yeah, I do think that has kind of shaped me into becoming like an athlete now.
Yeah. And so talk to me about your dad, Lindsay. Big L, as he's known.
You're a big fan, aren't you?
Big fan, yeah. So he's been really inspirational in your career, hasn't he? Like in terms of, because you were obviously in that environment with the boys, but then he was involved with the women's set up at Hibs, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So he obviously, he got me involved in the boys team initially, and then I got to age 10 and I remember thinking, going in the car back from like a game, I was like, Dad, I was like, what's the next move? And this was someone that was, you know, age 10 that I was like, we need to move on.
Really?
Yeah, like where can I go and develop? Because I knew it was getting to an age where, you know, girls can't play with in a boys team forever, and it was getting to that age and stage. I was like, what's the next move? And so he I'm not exactly sure how it came, but my sister was at Hibs, I think. That's how initially it came. And he spoke to one of the under-13s coaches, Ronnie Hamilton, and was like, look, my daughter's 10. She loves football. She'd love to come and try out with you guys. Is that okay? So literally like the next week I was at Hibs, and I was 10, so it was under-13. So it was like, I was quite young. And yeah, I loved it. And that was it. And I moved on and started my time at Hibs.
Now, with your time at Hibs comes a crucial part in your journey, because that's the first time you met Claire Emsley.
Yeah,
now I spoke. Right. So that's your best pal. So I spoke to her earlier and I said, what was your first impressions of Caroline?
Oh, what did she say?
She said that you turned up with a massive headband on and she thought that you were going to be turning up for tennis lessons rather than football.
That's so sly. No, that sounds about right. I had a massive like white headband thing. It was so tight, it actually used to hurt my ears.
Are you going to bring it back?
Am I going to bring it back?
Yeah, you could.
Probably not. I think that ship sailed.
But what was your sort of impressions of Claire? How did that friendship
start? Well, me and
start?
Claire, I remember Claire more when I, like before I actually knew her, because she played for Hutchie Vale. I played for Hibs, and we always played against each other. And at that time, I was a left winger, which, you know, it's hard to believe. Yeah. But and Claire was a right winger, and she always had the sickest like boots. She had like the brand new Preds. Like every time I played her,
she said that you had mentioned that.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, oh, this girl, she's always has really cool boots.
What were your boots of choice?
It varied. Talk 90s.
Not bad.
Yeah.
But you were always envious of her.
Yeah, they were always cool, and she had, you know, the tongue on like the pair just looked really sick.
Yeah.
And she had quite frizzy hair too. So like you would look at her straight, but her hair was like coming out the sides, kind of like
yeah,
now.
Still
to
a
be
bit
fair.
Now, yeah.
So that is my first ever memory, and I remember one time she might remember this. We played Hutchie in like a semi final, and the goalkeeper kicked it from our hands. And I headed the ball, and obviously I hate heading the ball, like I did back then as well. And I didn't head it properly, and it proper went down my back and jarred my back. And I had, like, it was, like, really hurt my back because I didn't do it properly, and I had to get subbed. And I was out for a good, like, 2 weeks, age, like, 11.
Right, okay, that was the first serious injury, was it?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why I don't love heading the ball, to be fair. But, yeah, no, she, yeah, then she, I joined Hibs first, and then she came along the next year. And to be fair, the first little bit, I was so quiet. She was quite quiet. So it actually took a little bit to say a couple
of words.
Yeah,
she mentioned that you were like quite quiet when you were younger and stuff. Was she quiet? No.
She was quite quiet, yeah. Right, okay. But she was kind of in with all the Edinburgh lot because they all did regional squads together, where I was a bit of an outsider.
Yeah.
And then we did our first ever Scotland camp together in Perth. It was when we used to play at McDermott Park. And she was my roommate.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think we bonded then.
Right, okay, yeah. That was the start of it, wasn't it?
I'd say we bonded because we were both really nervous and, like, quiet. And, we were put together and that was that. We haven't looked back since.
That's amazing to see how your careers have, like, properly, like, gone in tandem, because you've, like, played... You made your debut at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously played at a major tournament together, the World Cup, and then you were at Man City together as well. So And then you're still the national team now, so...
There's been some mad moments together that we would never, well, we dreamed of. Like, just little moments, like playing for Man City, little, you know, like big games, cup finals.
Yeah, and there was some great imagery, like at the FA Cup final at Wembley.
FA Cup, like we were warming up at Wembley. This is a couple of years ago, so it was full crowd. And we always take a moment to be like, this is pretty sick. And we like wink at each other. And we're like, how have we ended up here? But, nah, it's sick to share it with someone that's gone through pretty much exactly what you've gone through, and you've known each other for so long and always wanted the same thing. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Like when you went up the steps to collect the FA Cup trophy, like the two of you were like at the far end together making sure that you were. And then were you not like, it was a Man City title party?
Yeah, that was something.
And then you two were like up on the stage with Fernandinho lifting the trophy.
With the Premier League trophy.
Were you?
We were like to Fernandinho, he had the Premier League trophy. We had the Conti Cup. We were like, do you want to switch? He was like, yes. Yeah. So we did the Premier League and we were like this. And he had the Conti Cup and he was like Oh, it was so funny.
Because there was thousands of fans there.
Yeah,
that day,
it was in
there?
Like the middle of Manchester, and we'd done like a parade on the bus, like an open top bus, and me and Claire were loving it. And and then at the end we went on stage, and that was when we did the cup. But yeah, there's been moments like that that have been sick, and like the World Cup, obviously. Yeah. To share that with one of your best mates is pretty cool.
Because the two of you are like inseparable in camp. But was it just because you enjoy your like each other's company
we
so much,
but like. We just haven't changed, like we're still like so immature and a bit embarrassing, and like she's still frizzy, like she's still got frizzy hair.
But you've got rid of the headband, so at least there's a bit
I've moved on, she hasn't.
And so in terms of like away from football, you and Claire are obviously quite close, so she's got two dogs, Bon and Jovi, and then you've now got a dog as well, Skye.
I do,
so do you like obviously she's at Everton now, but do you still meet up quite regularly?
Or? So she lives like 40 minutes away from me, and obviously I got a dog last year, and she was like, Kaz, what are you thinking? Like, what are you doing? Like, you're not a dog person. And I was like, Claire, like, I am. Like, I'm just getting a wee sausage dog. Like, and she was shocked that I actually went through with it. And she actually came over the other day, and she loves, so she's like into proper dogs. Like, she's got Labradors and massive, they're really cute to be fair. And she actually has like fallen in love with my little dog now because she's seen how cute.
Yeah.
And easy she is compared to her too. Like,
how are you finding that?
What, being a dog bum?
Yeah, being a dog bum,
it's been an interesting experience. Like, don't get me wrong, when we first got her, I was like, I don't know what we're doing. Because it's hard work again. I don't know if you have ever had a puppy.
Never.
You've had a puppy, you know. And it's, you don't really know until you have one what it, and everyone tells you, like, my parents were like, don't do it. And I was like, it'll be fine. Like, but you know what? You get past that stage, and I actually love her. She's like, it's such a nice kind of distraction to come home to. Like, we go out walking a lot more. And it's just like a nice, consistent thing. So, like, she's always buzzing to see you regardless. And obviously, I'm away a lot as well. So, I mean, I'm not number one in the house, but, like, that's okay.
And in terms of after football, what have you thought about? Because you're doing a media degree at the moment, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you want to do? Media? Is that what you're
I want
at?
Your job, mate.
You want my job? You can have it, that's fine. More than welcome to it.
No, you know, I don't know. Like, I kind of change. Recently, I have lots of things in my head that I would love to do. It varies from, like, maybe going into the media, maybe going into coaching. That's a new thing that I've thought of, because as I get older, I just feel like that's... I don't know, it's something I've become more interested in the last like year or so. But then there's a part of me that wants to just set up like a skincare makeup brand.
Wow, so you really don't know what you want
to
do?
No, I don't know. Yeah.
I thought you were set on the media career.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not set on it. I really enjoy it, and I love my degree.
Yeah.
And I love like getting experience in whether it's radio, journalism, TV.
You commentate on some City Men's games, don't
you? I do a bit of co-commentary.
How's that?
It's good, it's quite hard. Like, right, okay. You have to talk, like, constantly, which...
You're good at that.
I'm not that great at that, mate, you know, I'm quiet. But, yeah, that is, it's good experience, it's good to practice, and just, like, I like to have, like, a view of lots of different things.
Well, definitely. So you can either go into media or skincare.
Yeah.
So those are the two avenues.
I would love, like, a makeup brand. Like, that's my thing that I actually am really into, like, which people might not know that, but, I like that side of... it's not so much side of football, but just, I don't know, it's just something that I enjoy and developed over time.
Because that's quite an interesting one as well, because as you said, you are quite like passionate about that, like in terms of like when you go on the football pitch, you want to like, you have makeup on, or not. Is that just something that you've always had like since you were growing up, or has that developed over
time?
That,
definitely not. No. That's definitely developed over time. If you look back at pictures of me, you'll realise that it's been over the last few years. And I think like for me, I've always tried to like break the kind of stereotype of female athletes. You know, I think 10 years ago, a girl playing football, there would be certain associations put with that, you know, that they maybe couldn't be feminine and all that kind of thing. And for me, I always have enjoyed kind of going against that and just, you know, I always have my nails done, just little things like that.
So
and
like,
I always
feeling
wear
good and all that
a
sort
bit
of stuff,
makeup. Yeah. For me, that's something I enjoy, and it's just to show that female athletes can do all that stuff as well if they like it, you know.
Yeah, because there's a few players in the squad that are like that as well, I think.
Yeah.
Like, even yesterday, Lisa Evans said, as a photographer at training, yeah, okay, that's great, because I'm going to put makeup on before the session.
Yeah,
and I was like, all right, do you want to know before there's a photographer? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's why so, I text you all the time to ask.
Just text me because you want content for your Insta.
I don't. I mean, any day now, I'm waiting for that. But yeah, I think, especially as the game's grown and we are on TV and we are getting our pictures taken, like you see in the men's game, you know, they are quite image conscious and yeah, it might not be makeup, but it's whatever it is, it's haircuts, it's fashion. And I think that's exactly the same in the women's game, and you can see that kind of growing over the years, but it's been something that I've always enjoyed.
So before this, we had a wee chat about these sort of three key games. That's the kind of feature that we have on the podcast. So
yep.
Let's start with your debut, Iceland against Scotland, 1st of June 2013. So we won 3-2. Special, obviously, because it was your debut. But unique because you were at school at the time. And also, as I spoke about Claire Emsley, it was her debut as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, do you know what? We shared a debut together and we had to do a speech after as well.
Joint speech? Or
yeah. So me, Claire and Siobhan Hunter, we all got our first caps on the same day. And so the thing back then, actually, it's kind of died off now. But yeah, I feel like we should bring it back. You had to make a speech of like what it meant to you and all that kind of thing in front of the whole squad and staff. And obviously, new into squad, it's quite an intimidating thing to do. But yeah, Siobhan spoke first, said like a really nice thing about everything. Claire added to that. And it got to me and I was just like, oh yeah, like just what they said really. As in, so I didn't actually say anything. But it went down well. I got a few laughs and I was like, cool. So that was that. But yeah, we shared our first game together and I was in school. Yeah. So
So what was that? Like that's mad. So
yeah.
What, you sixth or fifth year?
I was in sixth year.
Right, okay.
About to leave school.
And then what, you get the call?
So I was
Did they call? Did they call you at that time or?
Yeah, they called me. So
were you in school?
I think I was on study leave.
Right.
Do you know, because it was like June.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Oh, okay,
I think
yeah,
I'd sat my like last exams maybe or yeah, I must have finished my exams.
Yeah.
And I wasn't called up in the initial squad, but there'd been an injury or a pull out or whatever. And so they called me up and literally that afternoon drove to Glasgow Airport, got on a flight to Iceland.
What age were you then?
17. Yeah, I was about to turn 18, but 17. And
you and Claire must have been buzzing.
We were buzzing. And who did I share with? Jane Ross.
Right, okay.
She was my roomie. And she's so nice. So
yeah,
like, it was pretty easy. And she was just like, I always remember saying to me, like, because I was buzzing because I was about to go on holiday as well. So yeah, within that 2-week period, I'd left school, got my first cap, got my second cap. 2 weeks later, in between times, gone to prom, and then after that, went to Magaluf on a girls' holiday.
Wow, so quite a few weeks then.
Yeah, it was, and then after that, moved down to Arsenal, so that all happened in like 3 week time.
So that was pretty mad.
It was a lot, yeah.
In terms of the game itself, what do you remember? Do you still have like, big, Lindsay's got like a shrine and he does.
Don't say shrine, it makes it sound weird.
Yeah, but it is. It's weird.
It's like, not that weird.
But none of the other siblings feature in it.
Well, do you know what? There was a kickoff about that in our household.
Because it's like, you're top and all that is up there.
But do you know the thing that my parents changed recently is they made a wall in the house because the other siblings weren't too happy about, you know, like shirts all over the place. And they were like, well, Caroline's not got a degree. Which is true.
Oh, harsh. I know you're just sticking at the media degree.
I know, I need to finish it. So, yeah, they always say, oh, well, she plays football, she's not got a degree. And they all have, like, 2 degrees each. So there's a wall in the house and it's everyone's graduation photos. And I'm not on it.
So that was the first game that we've chosen. Second game, so you've gone from that, your debut, to then a major tournament, Euro 2017, Scotland against Spain, 1-0. And then
the goal.
And so you score the goal that gets our first win in a major tournament. What was that experience like?
Do you know what? It's one of the worst goals I've ever scored. Do you remember it?
Like, I do, yeah.
Yeah. And
it took a deflection.
It was a horrible.
Aaron broke through.
Crito, like, flips it over. Erin goes in with the keeper, bounces back to me. I take a touch, pretty much have the whole goal to aim for. And then there's like a recovering defender on the line. I hit it right at her and it goes through her legs and it like scrapes in over the line. So
enjoyed the celebration though.
Celebrate. The pics are good from that. The only good pics that you've delivered. Yeah.
But that's you and... Because Chloe was there as well and that's somebody that you're
The Euros... The Euros was a cool experience. Obviously shared that more so with Chloe because we were roommates. And she's another one that we've grown up together, like through all the youth squads. That was sick. And that game itself, it was hard because we got knocked out. But on the flip side, we'd won a game at the Euros. I'd scored at the Euros. And yeah, it was amazing to be at a major tournament. And a good experience for us going forward, which obviously led us on to bigger things.
Yeah. And now I can't believe we're going to be speaking about this game, but the third game that we've chosen is Scotland against Argentina. Corsi and Erin have avoided it in previous podcasts, but you're going to go there. So 19th of June 2019, first of all, how did the experience at the World Cup, how was that different to the Euros?
Well, for me, it was different because it wasn't my first major tournament. It definitely felt bigger because it was a World Cup. So I think the Euros, I remember getting really quite nervous about it and thinking about that first game for a long time before it. It was against England as well, and it went the way it went. So I took a lot from the Euros and just also the disappointment of actually being really close to getting out of the group stages, because although we had like a few bad results, we actually only needed one goal in the end to get through.
Yeah, if we'd scored a second in that Spain game, we'd have
That's
been through,
it. Yeah. So I remember thinking, don't worry too much about the first game, for example. And just, because it was against England, so we knew it was going to be tough. And it was, you just have to focus on each game individually. I feel like I learned a lot, but the World Cup itself was definitely on a different level. We had a good squad, I think. We had maybe a stronger squad going into that, just in terms of people being in good, more experience and being in good places in their career in terms of ages and fitness-wise and like you say, experience. I felt like we were in a good place going into it. Obviously, the Argentina game, I think I choose that game because I did learn a lot from it, which does sound like a cliche, but it is legit. I think it was the two opposite ends of how football can give you so much joy, but then literally, like, kind of break your heart at the same time, and that was exactly that game. It was the first 75 minutes were some of the most enjoyable moments I've ever had in football. It was a full stadium pretty much.
And such a cool stadium to play in as well.
Such a cool stadium. Like, I remember the change in, like, I remember a lot about that game because
all the girls went to like a USA game a couple of days before. So to see it as it was and then to actually play in it, it must have been amazing.
Yeah, I forgot actually. Yeah, we went to the US, which was sick to be like a fan as well at the World Cup, and then a few days later we were playing in it. So that was a cool experience. But yeah, that stadium itself, the changing room, the setup, the pitch, everything about it was just, it was like perfect for us. And we knew we had a tough task to, did we had to win 3-0, I think, or 2.
No, it was to do with the goal difference,
so we had to score
quite a few. As long as we won, then we'd have a fighting chance going into the next.
I think we had to win by 2.
The next day,
Something like that.
It was like there was a result the next day that we would all be waiting for. But if the more goals we scored, the more likely.
The better.
When we were sitting at 3-0, we're going,
this was it, yeah.
I think if we stayed at 3-0, we would have gone through, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The first 75 minutes, 3-0 up, me and Claire winking at each other on the left wing, like doing step overs, doing 1-2s, like we're back at Hibs. And then very quickly we were back down to earth.
Because before we get to that, you said like earlier about how in the national anthems, like your brother, like he always tries to bam you up during the anthems.
Stitch, yeah. So like when I can see him in the stand, it's not good because he just tries to make me laugh. And that game I remember so well. Oh, he just does like weird things just to try and get in my head and make me laugh. And like I shouldn't look at him, but I can't help it because it is quite funny. So that game, I remember I could see my mum, him, and my dad all in a row, and he was really making me laugh that game for the anthems. So, yeah, I forgot about that, but I remember when we were speaking about it. so he'll be buzzing with that mention. But yeah.
Is he coming to the game on Friday?
He's not, no. No. Only turns up for big games.
Does he, yeah.
No, he's in, he doesn't live here anymore. So
after the first 75 minutes, going great. Mm-hmm. And then, so we concede one goal, then concede another. What are you thinking at that point?
Oh, I'm thinking this doesn't look good. Yeah. It was mad as well because of the goals, the way they went in. You know, there was some questionable decisions in terms of refereeing.
Were you aware of that at the time? Because obviously in the lead up to the third goal, we were making a sub. And I think they take a free kick as Fiona Brown's coming on the pitch. Yeah. Like, were you aware of that at the time?
Or? No, I wasn't, but I watched it back and I was fuming at it because it's so obvious. And that's not the rule. Like, you wait until that, because she was literally going over to the opposite as a fullback. Yeah. Or
she was defending on that side.
A defender, wide free kick. So that is unfortunate, obviously. And then I think as well with the penalty, again, the whole emotional side of that game was crazy because we concede a penalty, Lee saves it. So within that, we're like, oh my gosh. And then we're like, oh wow, we're actually going to do it. Like, surely we're going to do it because Lee saved a penalty. And then it gets brought back. And yeah, I just couldn't believe what I genuinely remember was standing on the pitch thinking, what is going on? I could not believe what was happening. It was crazy. And yeah, that was that. And it took a lot of, obviously, the squad. It took a lot of me. I couldn't watch much more of the World Cup. Because as well, they changed the rules, didn't they, the next day. Yeah. So it was just, there was like a few bits that were tough to take in that game. But at the same time, I feel like we learnt a lot. Yeah. And that is the game at like the highest level. It can happen. So it can be quite cruel.
In terms of like the media scrutiny on that as well, because it was so high profile, like there was a lot of people watching that. How did you sort of deal with that sort of media scrutiny for the World Cup as well? Because it was a step up, I think, from what had been before.
I mean, I personally don't bother too much about what is said. So, like, I'll come off Twitter quite.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So, during like major tournaments, you'll just deactivate Twitter, or what do you do?
Yeah, I'll just delete the app. So I still obviously have my account, but I can live without Twitter. Like, I'm not really on it that
what
much.
What about Insta?
I like Insta a bit more, but on the lead up to big games, I'd delete Instagram.
Do you, right? Okay.
Yeah. And then,
so that's quite often you do that?
Yeah, quite a lot because I just feel like it's a distraction that I just don't need. Like, I don't really get anything from it, especially when you get tagged in things that you don't need to see. I think what's most important is just what's going on in your circle and how you're preparing for things and dealing with things. So,
because that was something that Anna Signal did as the head coach of the women's team at the Euros. She asked everyone, every player, like what they thought, but her advice was everyone off social media.
Yeah.
So I take it that you've sort of done that from a young age.
Yeah, personally, I think we always have that discussion going into like big tournaments. And I think like nowadays people can't come off social media full time. Like people like it and people, you know, really can't. It's a habit for them. So like to say people can't have to come off it, like it's probably unrealistic to expect everyone to do that. But I think you know, we had a thing in the summer with the Olympic squads. Yeah. We just decided not to speak about what was being said. So if you want to read it, that's fine, but don't bring it. Don't bring it into the bubble. Don't talk about it because
it's just an individual.
You might be reading it, but the person opposite you might not be on Twitter at all and might not have been for weeks. So just be careful what you're saying and who around, kind of thing. Yeah. So I think that's quite similar to what we're like here.
And then sort of in the aftermath of that Argentina game, it was, so we had like a free day after that game. So everybody was obviously devastated, but it was your birthday.
It was,
Well, that must have been a bit bittersweet, or?
It was weird. It was like definitely a memorable birthday because I'm not sure I'll play, you know, in a World Cup game and then have my birthday the next day in Paris, which was pretty sick. So yeah, definitely took my mind off things. I went for a nice breakfast in front of the Eiffel Tower, a bit of champagne. Not that we were celebrating anything, but it was nice. And I think that's so important for me is to try and switch off as much as possible. It was hard after that game because you put so much into these tournaments and you prepare for so many weeks. And then like that is over. And there is definitely a period of like a come down that you
have to deal with it. You just have to go through it. And it took maybe a week or so.
In terms of the aftermath of that game then, obviously you had your birthday the next day, but it was such a heartbreaking end to the tournament after such an intense build-up. Did that take you a while to recover from that?
Or? Yeah, I think that was the hardest moment I've had up until that point. Yeah. I've had other ones since, but for me, because the way it all unraveled and like you say, you have such a build-up and it's so exciting and the media presence was so much bigger and your whole family comes out and you've got the fans coming out, and that was the first time for us at a World Cup. It was huge and it was such a career highlight, but it was also so difficult when, you know, the way it all kind of finished. And it was, at the end of the day, we only played three games and it's a group stage and that's it. Yeah, you've put, like, not even just the camps leading up to it, but the whole year you're thinking about a World Cup, hopefully being selected and playing in. So it's definitely, I think, the emotional toll it takes, major tournaments, is more than the physical, and it takes a while to get over, especially that one did. But yeah, I just had to get on holiday and chill out.
Yeah, because you mentioned that there about the build-up to it. It was really intense. Like, I remember we were away in January in La Manga, mm-hmm. then away for the Algarve Cup, and yeah. then away in April again, and yeah. we beat Brazil, and then and then Jamaica. So that really was a full-on year. And then, as you say, the tournaments, I suppose this is probably what you've learned when you've been at the tournaments, is that they are so short. Like,
yeah.
the game, once you have the first game, the second one's just like a couple of days later, yeah. and then the third, so.
Yeah, it's mad. Like, literally within 10 days, your time can be over. And like you say, we spent 6 months preparing for that moment. So I think going forward, it's just about being better and getting out the group, yeah. which would be nice. But yeah, that's just part of the process. And for us, you know, we haven't reached many tournaments. We've reached a Euros and a World Cup now. So it's still quite new to us. And you see those teams that qualify for World Cups each time, and Euros and Olympics and whatever it is. And, you know, we're not quite at that level, but we also have a lot of experience in the team now. So it's about how can we build on those experiences and come back better. Obviously, right now, we can't even think that far ahead. We've got massive qualifiers to play. So yeah, but it's about kind of using the experiences like the Argentina game, and obviously the disappointment of not qualifying for the Euros, and channeling it into being better and making sure we don't have to go through those kind of things again. Yeah.
And then the World Cup obviously being hosted in Australia and New Zealand, just a brilliant target.
Oh yeah.
Because that would just be incredible, wouldn't
it? Oh, it would be unreal. I mean, I've never been to Australia or New Zealand, yeah. so... I mean, yeah, like, that's what you want to play in. That is literally, as a player, you want to look back and kind of see what tournaments you played in and how well you've done. That's kind of how I think I'll probably, not judge my career, but that's what I want to be part of. Yeah. And I think we're good enough to be there. Obviously, we've got the campaign to go, but yeah, having been at those tournaments, now you get a taste for it and realise just how good it is. Like, the Euros next year is going to be tough because we've been there before and we know what it's like. And now to watch on from the side, not being there, that's going to be a lot harder than it was before, yeah. just because we know what it's going to be like. But yeah, Australia would be sick.
Yeah, it would be. But in terms of you as a person, if you compare yourself from like 2017 at the Euros to now, it seems like you've taken on a bit more of a leadership role within the team. I suppose that probably is because you've played in all these big games. But how do you find that as a leader?
Yeah, I think it's something that I'm starting to adapt to and something that I'm consciously trying to work on. You know, before I knew it, I'm 26, which, you know, it's not that old. But in terms of football, that I've had quite a lot of years of experience. So, yeah, I look around the squad now and I am probably one of the older ones and been in the squad for quite a long time alongside, you know, like Kors, Jen, Lisa. And that's probably the oldest ones at the minute or the most experienced. So, yeah, it's something I want to develop and I feel it would be a good time to do that in the squad. And I think I'm better when I have a bit more responsibility. So... yeah, I feel like I've got good role models though in terms of Corsi's like a great leader. Kim was as well in her own kind of different way. She was yeah, she was great to learn off. So, yeah, I feel like that's something that I want to develop.
It's like even at the World Cup, I remember you saying about in the Japan game, I think we were 1-0 down
yeah.
at halftime. So 1-0 down at the break, everyone's deathly silent in the changing room, trying to think what's going on. And you were the one that actually stepped up to say, right, we need to do this, we need to do that. So that was maybe a big moment for you as well in terms of taking that responsibility in a moment where everybody was looking for a bit of guidance from the players and stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's just something that, you know, for me, I think it comes from having two older sisters that used to, like, speak for me growing up. Like, I was, like, really slow to talk, so my sister spoke for me. So I think I have a little bit of that in me now. Like, if there's someone else around that can say what needs to be said, like, I'll kind of just leave it to them. But as I get older, I'm like, no, like, I need to push myself to kind of take that on and speak in the moments where it might be hard and kind of push myself to do that. So yeah, that was probably one of those moments in the past I maybe hadn't done that. But I think as well, when it's such a big moment like that, you have to find something from somewhere, and you can't just always look up to the older ones and in that changing room at that time, say, and expect them to do it all the time. Like, everyone on the pitch, everyone in the squad has a right to say what they need to say. And the more leaders in the team, the more successful. So I think it's not just about the older ones or more experienced ones. It's about the younger ones coming through and them being comfortable enough to say what they want to say. So I think in this group, we have a good balance, that we have good young players coming through that have the confidence to speak up as well.
And I suppose it's about encouraging them to speak as well, to make sure that, as you say, they're not just spoken for, that you actually give them that avenue to talk and voice their views.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such an important thing. And it's great that I see, like, the young players come through and they do have, like, a lot of confidence to speak up, which I think is a real positive thing, because I was quite quiet as a... You know, I think even now, like, I'm probably not going to be the one shouting and screaming on a football pitch, but I've kind of learned as well, that doesn't necessarily mean that's how you have to lead. You know, I've learned from Corsi and Kim that it's kind of what you say more so than how you say it sometimes. So, but yeah, you're right. It has to be an environment that people feel comfortable in.
So let's finish on a few sort of quick fire questions. If you could be another Scotland teammate for the day, who would you be and why? And I feel like we should take Claire Emsley out of this, because we've spoken about her.
Yeah, I know how Claire thinks, so that would be boring. I think the obvious one's Erin, because...
Right. Why is that obvious?
She comes out with some interesting stuff. Like, she
Give
is...
Give us an example.
Oh, it's just, I can't even, like... She just,
I know what you mean, she has.
She's funny. Like, sometimes I'm just like, what? Oh, you on a bit. But we were actually saying at lunch, like, we'd like to be a fly on the wall sometimes with Ez, because she comes out with some belters. Just funny, like, one-liners. We're like, where does that come from? But she's a good laugh. She's definitely one of a kind in this squad.
What's the situation with was it the Crocs they've got or something?
Oh, don't ask me.
But I did, but... Aaron's got
well, do you know what? It was last camp and I missed out.
Oh, do you feel
so
like...
that's what they all get up to when I'm not here and make little shoes for each other.
And you weren't
so, but to be fair, I've seen the shoe. I don't want to be involved in that.
No, what? I know. What is that all about?
I don't know. It's like some inside joke that I'm not part of, but I'm not bothered or hurt by that.
Now, in women's football, the stories of, like, things that are funny that happen in camp, and they're not really put out in the public, like, nobody really knows about that sort of stuff. But I mean, camp is like, does have a good vibe, like, there's mm-hmm. it's a good laugh. So
it is.
Tell me about some of the sort of funny moments that you've had in your Scotland career, because it's, I mean, it started in 2013, so you've been here a while. So
how many years is that now? 8 years.
Yeah,
wow.
Which is, yeah, do you know, you think what? About it like that,
like, it's... when Jane Ross, I shared with Jane Ross, and she said she was like 25 at the time and I was like 17, or she was like 24, and she was like, Kaka, she was like, just to let you know, like, enjoy being young because it passes really quickly. And I was like 17 thinking, all right, Jano, like, you're 24, that's ancient. So, like, that's what all people at 24 say. But then I'm 26 now and I was like, I always say this to Jane. I'm like, I remember my first camp when you said, enjoy it because it goes so quickly. And she was right.
I remember you always said something about you can have fun until you're 25. And
25 is a cut-off.
So that's all. Now you're 26, and what's happening?
It's
all downhill
from
here.
Yeah.
Why?
I kind of do live by that.
Do you? But that's kinda. No. But that's such a negative mindset, because then you're only 25 years in, and that's you thinking that the
best
part of your...
But I say cut-off for certain things.
in terms of what?
You know, I just at 25, like, you kind of just have to be a little
settle
bit more together.
Right, okay.
Not necessarily settle down, because that sounds very boring, but like, just like, there's not, a, you can't, yeah, you know about that. Yeah, you just like can't make excuses all the time for stuff. Like, but in saying that, your athletic peak comes at 27.
Does it?
As a female athlete.
See, so that, so then your actually, 25 mantra isn't right then.
For certain things it is. Like, yeah. No, like, just maybe, just, yeah, I feel like at 25 you just have to mature a little bit. Like, off the pitch, not necessarily around football, but, and then as well, physically, you have to start taking care of yourself a bit more.
Have you found that?
Yeah, I would say, like, I'm 26 now. I'd say the last 2 years, I think as well, I've been exposed to high performance environments like City and, yeah, obviously with the summer as well. I feel like that was a real high level stuff in terms of like recovery and nutrition and
like,
all that.
You kind of never go anywhere without a bottle of water.
Always. So, to be fair, that's been since I was like 16.
Is it? Is that the one? Is that the, you've always had that?
This
one?
Isn't the water bottle I've had since I was 16.
Oh, I was wondering else,
because it looks way nice.
Yeah. But you've always had a water bottle since you were 16.
Always. Like,
why?
Well, do you know? Because when we were young, like on education camps in Scotland, they always banged on about hydration and always have a water bottle. And you'd go into meetings and you'd always have to have a water bottle. And I take it literally everywhere because I hate being like dehydrated.
Right, okay.
In the car, like everywhere, I always have this bottle.
Right.
It's actually quite a nuisance because I have to carry it.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
But it's just something that you've got, and so in, and in terms
always.
Of
same as Claire, to be fair, we compare water bottles.
That sounds very boring.
We are quite, yeah, that's what I say. We're over 25.
So as soon as you start to get to 25, that's the sort of stuff
you
speak about.
Yeah. We're talking about gardens the other day.
Gardens, oh.
She thought she was getting scammed, actually, because she'd paid a deposit for a garden and then she couldn't get hold of the people.
Really?
Yeah. I was gutted because we were going
to
go on Rip Off Britain, but they got back to
her. And what's your garden like?
Well, it's a state right now.
It needs work.
You know what? Like, we've got some nice bits going on.
Right, okay.
But it's winter, eh? So it's.
Ah, okay, so leave it until the summer. And then...
Yeah, the summer was looking well.
Right, so when you reach 25, you need to focus on your garden and compare water bottles
yeah,
with
like,
your pals.
Basically, that's actually not a bad summary.
Right, okay, fair enough.
Like buying garden furniture.
Right, okay.
That's boring.
Yeah, it sounds it.
You don't pretend you've not been to...
Not yet.
Oh,
not
soon.
Yet. Soon. Very soon. Yeah, that's happening soon. But also in terms of your nutrition, your performance, you're not a vegan, are you?
No.
Why are you laughing?
I gave it a go for 2 weeks about 3 years ago. Couldn't do it.
Why?
I agree. Like, I just... For me, it just all became about, like, there was what you couldn't eat, what you can eat. It was a bit too restrictive for me. Like, I could not eat certain things.
But, your boyfriend's vegan, is that right?
Vegetarian.
Vegetarian, so you still...
Oh, like... I like vegetarian meals. Like, I'll happily eat vegetarian meals, like... But I eat meat as well.
Right, okay.
But I do think like I'm more switched on to the whole issues like environmental stuff with it all.
Now, you're playing with that performance ring that's on your middle finger on your right hand. Like what is that?
This.
Yeah. So what is that?
It is. It's called an Aura ring. Aura ring.
Right.
And basically, it's a performance tool.
So what does it do?
So like it tracks. It's. I mean, I don't like the look of it, but I do have my nails done, so that's okay. yeah, it tracks like your sleep, your activity, your exercise, your heart rate, your recovery. Yeah, all that kind of thing. Just to see what you're up to, basically.
Why are you called Kaka?
that's a weird lead-in
It is a weird lead-in, but...
Well, this is what I got from it. When I was like 14, 15 training with the Hibs first team, there was a coach there called Jimmy. He was actually a really good coach. And I went in the first session, he started calling me Kaka. And I think it's after the Brazilian player.
Yeah, well, I would imagine so, yeah.
Yeah.
So and that's just stuck ever since? Because like, that is literally what you get called.
It's quite a Scottish thing, though. Down south, it's Kaz.
Right.
And they're all, but when I was at City with Jen, she called me Kaka, and everyone was like, oh. So then a couple of people clocked onto it. But Scotland camp, it's Kaka.
Definitely Kaka.
Yeah.
Best piece of football memorabilia you have?
John McGinn shirt.
Not bad.
Can I say that?
You can say that. Well, that's good.
Big
that
John
appeals,
fan.
That appeals to the Scotland fan.
It does. Know your audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So you, how did you get hold of that?
Just messaged him.
Just chanced your arm.
Yeah.
And asked.
Well, we follow each other on Instagram.
Right, okay, so you just went for it.
Yeah.
Do you not like Kevin De Bruyne shirt as well?
I do.
That's not bad, but we'll say John McGinn because it's Scotland.
Scottish podcast, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, when you never actually answered in terms of your funniest moment with Scotland, because I want to speak about team building days.
Okay.
Especially under Anna.
Yeah.
There was quite a lot of them, wasn't there? And some of them were different.
Yes, that's fair to say. With Anna, that was a huge part. You know, sometimes the chat would be more about the team activity than the game, you know, that we had to play. So Anna was quite big on team bonding and yeah, kind of life off the pitch and making sure we were happy off the pitch. So yeah, we did quad biking in Cyprus. That was pretty cool. Another one you want me to talk about.
What's that?
The sheep herding.
Yeah. Let's talk about that before the Euros.
I mean, I know you're just waiting for it. Yeah.
What
the
was?
Euros.
Yeah.
Where was it? Holland.
Holland, yeah.
And we were all stood out. So we were in this really nice hotel and it had like nice grounds. And you were there, right?
Yeah.
And we were like just told to go outside. And it was Anna and Anne-Helene, our assistant. I think she maybe organised this one.
Right.
Because she said she always wanted to do it.
Did
afterwards.
You know what was coming?
No. So I think we all just went outside. And then this guy turned up in a van and a sheepdog ran out of his van. And he was like herding his dog back.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Hi, I'm whoever. And today we're going to learn how to herd sheep." And then he opened the back of his van and loads of sheep just ran out into like towards us. And so we had to get into groups and like herd the sheep. So there was a competition. I can't really remember. I just remember chasing sheep around and like trying to like wave them in. And I was also thinking, I was like, we've got to play our first ever Euro game in a few days and we're doing this. It was quite random, but I liked it.
Yeah, but it was, I suppose that was a big thing that Anna had in terms of like bringing the team together and all that. You did have a really strong team ethos.
We did loads of cool stuff like paddle boarding in Brazil.
That's
on
good.
A Brazilian river.
Right.
And we all had to drink cans of Coke when we got out of the water because I think there was things in the water that we weren't meant to swallow, if you get me, like dirty water.
Right.
And so the doctor was like, just have a can of Coke, you'll be fine.
Right, and that was medical
advice,
Brazil. Was it? Right, okay.
Yeah, apparently that is a thing though.
Is it?
You heard that, yeah.
Oh, no.
Apparently you are meant to drink Coke. Like.
Right, okay.
If you're, I don't know the ins and outs, but I just remember that.
Right, okay, fair enough.
And we were all fine.
Karaoke song of choice.
Well, I can't say I'm a massive karaoke fan. I don't know. I like maybe just like ABBA or something.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Did you have to, what was your initiation at City?
Proclaimers.
Oh, so you actually did, just went for Proclaimers. That was
I mean, it's classic. I think Claire, we did a duet.
Okay.
Me and Claire also did the Cheeky Girls. Because we are Cheeky Girls.
That wasn't the intro, was it? Oh dear. Where
was this? Cheeky Girls by the Cheeky Girls.
Where, at City?
Yeah, on the bus, I remember. We did it on the way back from a game.
And
everyone was like knackered and we were like, oh, let's get the bus going, let's do the Cheeky Girls. And no one paid attention. We were
just
up in front of
the
bus. Yeah, just having a good time by ourselves.
Yeah, well.
Which is usually what happens, but it was fun.
Last text or WhatsApp message you sent?
To you?
No.
Saying I'm going to be late.
No, no, just to me. Before that, got to be a bit late.
Before?
Yes.
Let me see. Oh, Claire Emsey.
What she said?
Can I borrow your wash bag?
Right, okay.
That's
and there's,
it.
There's another one. What's the last picture in your camera roll?
Oh, I can't even show you.
Oh, what?
I can. It's from yesterday.
What is it? Is it? Oh, is it for training picture?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
It's hot.
If it didn't make your Instagram, then...
Yeah, it's not going anywhere near my Instagram. It's from training. I mean, I'm all for the cause of the t-shirt, just to put that out there.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Just the picture of me, I just don't love.
Oh, okay.
Caption.
Yeah, understandable. Yeah, that's fine. You do enjoy content for your social media channels, don't you? You like promoting. But I suppose that's an important part now of a women's football as well.
Yeah. Well, any football, I think. I think it's such, even the men's game, I think that's where it was all at. I go through phases with Instagram where I'm like, right, let's post and do some content. And then I go through it where I'm not posting anything for days. But, you know, that's just the way the world works now. It is all through Instagram. And people also want to see stuff as well. So, some do.
Some do, yeah. Any superstitions or like pre-game rituals that you have or?
No, I'm not too superstitious. I try and stay away from that stuff because I think, like, I know players that get really hung up in it, and then, like, when you can't do a certain thing because of just circumstances, like, they get stressed. So I have, like, routines of, like, nutrition, like, eating a banana, maybe some caffeine. But I would say that's more, like, nutritional, not, like, a ritual.
Yeah. Yeah. And then last one, just on the relationship that you've got with Andy Murray. Mm-hmm. First of all, how did that come about? And how is it now? Like, do you speak to him regularly or?
Yeah, so it came about because I was looking for a new agent at the time because my old one was going on to other things. And it was through Man City. So my agents know someone at Man City. He obviously spoke to me. And then we met up. It wasn't like me and Andy going for a coffee. It was like...
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was like a photo shoot type thing, wasn't it?
Well, that came later. Oh, so okay. I met initially with who are now my agents, and we decided we're going to work together. And then a few weeks later, we did like a media thing for it. So went down south to London. Well, actually, Wimbledon and where else, obviously, to meet Andy. And I met Andy, and he was really sound. He's obviously exactly what you kind of expect him to be, really down to earth, humble, funny. We got on well, and we did a few like media interviews talking about obviously tennis, football, gender, equality, all those things that he's such an advocate for. Yeah. So yeah, it was really cool. And we worked together, and I have his number if I ever want to ask him for any advice or anything.
Do you ask him for advice?
I have done in the past.
In terms of like, what would you be asking him?
So like for a pre-season, I think it was maybe last pre-season, I just wanted to ask him what kind of recovery he did, if it was anything different to what we do. So it's like boring athlete stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
but like,
but it's
recovery
beneficial
and,
for you, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, well, he's a top athlete. Like, what does he do? And obviously, it's just like the 1%. And for him, that's so important in individual sports. So, yeah, I've asked him about that. He's been in pretty regular contact. Obviously, when I got selected for the Olympics, he was buzzing for that, and spoke about that a little bit. And yeah, he's been a bit busier now, I think. Yeah. He's back playing, so. But yeah, no, he's cool. And the agency, the guys that I work with on a more day-to-day basis have been really good so far. So it's all good.
Have you got your tickets for Wimbledon sorted next year?
Do you know what? Not yet, no.
But that's
I'm
on the
hoping
list, is
it's
it?
On the cards. Yeah, it's hopefully. We talked about it before. So I've never been to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be in the plans for next summer, hopefully.
Brilliant. Well, we've covered a lot there, Caroline. Thanks a lot for joining us on the podcast, and all the best for the matches coming up.
Thanks for having me.